Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
It's time for our parenting slot. We are joined once again by the universal inspiration to artists and musicians all over the world, David Carey. We were just talking about something to do with that sort of...
Hot dog soup.
Hot dog soup is what we were talking about. So, David, good afternoon to you. Hope you're
good
well.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Here's your first question. My son has an 8-year-old daughter who is missing her mother. Her mother is not living with them because she has a strong alcoholic tendencies and has been admitted to treatment centres on numerous occasions. She does not provide for her in any way, and when she does see her daughter, she tells her it's her work that keeps her away. The child is constantly asking her dad, myself and others why her mother's work is so hard, and cries because she misses her. She draws pictures which shows herself on her own and appears to be getting more affected by this. We all show her love and affection, but it is getting harder to deal with the situation, and would appreciate any advice on whether she should be told the truth or is it best to leave things as they are. Thank you, worried grandma.
That's a sad story. Well, first of all, one doesn't have strong alcoholic tendencies.
You are, yeah.
You either is or you isn't. And in this case, the answer is, which is very sad for the mother herself, of course, and the collateral damage makes it even sadder. This is the legacy of not telling the truth to children.
Yeah.
And now you have a confused 8-year-old who believes her mother is working all the time and knows, I'm sure, many children whose mothers are working, but who see their moms quite frequently, and moms all very often would be living in the family home and working, et cetera, and she can't quite figure it out. I think, worried grandma, the answer is you must speak to your son. If you're on speaking terms with the girl's mother, I think you need to talk to her too. It might be best to phrase it in a rather delicate way to the child, perhaps eliminating the alcoholism bit, but just saying mommy has not been well for a good number of years. She's had to have a lot of treatment and has been in and out of hospital a few times and whatnot. She loves you and sees you whenever she can, but sometimes she's just not well enough to come visit, honey.
Yeah.
And that should resolve the issue, I hope. Now, I don't know really, we don't know enough about the little girl and just what the source of all her distress really is. Is it just relating to mom, or are there other issues going on? But I think a very frank and open conversation, one with your son, grandma, and if possible, with the girl's mother, and tell the truth, phrase it in language that the little girl can understand. I don't think the word alcoholism or a drinking problem or such is really necessary, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's too much stigma, far too much finger pointing with that, and it just might cause further issues for the girl. Mm-hmm. The reality is the mother isn't well.
Yeah.
I think we could be very honest and say that much.
Yeah.
And because she's not well, she can only visit when she's able, and she comes when she's able, and let's enjoy her time when she's here. Now, big problem. If mom doesn't buy into this explanation, now you've got more confusion.
Yeah.
So I think a conversation with the mother is absolutely
necessary.
A necessary part of the solution here, because you can't tell the girl that mommy's sick and have the mommy come a month and a half later and say, I've been working and that's why I can't see you. So we need to talk about this. Yourself, your son, and the girl's mother.
Because it says here that she's an alcoholic. She's been admitted to treatment centers on numerous occasions. Mm. That doesn't say she's in one now. It sounds
exactly,
like
yeah.
it's quite chaotic
it does,
with
yes.
this woman, unfortunately.
Yeah, and these episodic visits by a parent can be more traumatic than the absence of a parent.
Yeah.
And I think the girl deserves an explanation. And
yes,
the explanation
she does, yeah.
should be quite simple. She's 8 now, so she can understand the concept of someone not being well and has had to have treatment sometimes in hospital, and see how that goes. But this isn't going to work unless the mother will cooperate.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there is no solution.
Well, if the mother doesn't cooperate, and perhaps the mother, you know, the mother doesn't want to admit this weakness to her daughter.
Yeah. Then you're still leaving the girl wondering why her mommy works so much that she can't see her.
Yeah.
So are we going to compound the lie by elaborating on it?
No, absolutely. But what I'm wondering though is if it's all very chaotic and the visits are only, you know, a very occasional, and she comes and she turns up unexpected and she tells the poor little girl a pack of lies, but she won't cooperate with at least telling her some of the truth or a version of the truth, is there an argument for going to court and saying, well, you can't see her because you're doing more harm than good
here? Okay, there is an argument for that. The success rate in doing that is pretty slim.
Yeah.
Courts, particularly in this country, are loath to terminate parental rights.
Yeah.
The mother, all we have is the facts of the question as it's been stated.
Yes.
The mother has not in any way interfered with the child, damaged her physically or psychologically. The girl is just confused. The court is not going to terminate the mother's access to this child.
Right.
I wouldn't think.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? You go to court.
No, you never know, but
you
yeah.
get an opinion from a judge, you don't get justice. You
yes.
know? You get the law.
Exactly.
So, and that's expensive. It causes further trauma.
Mm.
It may result in the child, in the court, saying that the child and the family should be further assessed through a very lengthy process called a Section 47 report, which is when the judge doesn't want to make a decision at all and makes an order that the family has to be assessed by a professional person. That's quite complex. It means the child has to visit a professional. And are you opening a bigger can of worms?
Do you want to go through all of that? Okay. Our 8-year-old son wakes most nights crying and talking incoherently. I'm sure he's still asleep, as I sleepwalked a bit as a child as well. We quietly take him back to bed and we will settle him down very quickly, and he never remembers it the next day. He's happy and healthy, but we worry he will fall downstairs or hurt himself wandering around asleep. We have noticed when he reads before bed, it sometimes helps. Any advice, please?
Well, this is a sleep disorder. He's 8 years old, sleepwalking. Maybe a some sort of night terrorish thing going on. It's hard to know. You have to just take precautions to keep him safe. You need a very strong gate at the top of the stairs that's locked, so he can't easily just slide it open. Of course, I suppose he could climb over it, but you'll have to watch out for that. You're doing everything right. You take him back to bed. You comfort him. If reading helps, then encourage him to read before bedtime.
Yeah.
Since that does seem to help. There's not much else you can do.
Mm.
You just take precautions so that a person who's sleepwalking is protected. Generally speaking, a sleepwalker isn't going to fall downstairs.
Yeah.
Because if they're able to navigate their way out of a room,
they can walk down the stairs.
There are cases of people who have severe sleep disturbances and sleepwalk that have gone into the kitchen and make themselves a couple of rashers and eggs, you know, completely asleep.
Yeah.
Only to discover the next morning who's been cooking in the middle of the night.
It rings a vague bell. There was some case of somebody who put on a huge amount of weight and they didn't understand why. And it turns out they were like eating at night when they were sleepwalking. Is this something people tend to grow out of?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's most common in middle childhood.
Yeah.
So typically starting around age 6 or 7. Could be younger, could be older.
Mm.
Not uncommon. There isn't any particular treatment for it. Take safety precautions. It's not a sign of any psychological disturbance or behavioral disturbance. It probably will go away. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
Even adults sleepwalk, as we know. We've just been talking about that. So we do have sleep disorder clinics here in Ireland, but an 8-year-old child with this profile is not going to be assessed for a sleep disorder. So.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they will.
Just routine precautions.
Yeah. My 11-year-old niece has been diagnosed with autistic spectrum disorder and an IQ of 60. This was quite a shock to all my family, as we feel she is doing very well. We always suspected there was an issue with her, but this diagnosis has made us worry about the transition to secondary school in 2 years' time. What can we do to prepare her and help her?
Well, look, this is a shock, of course. It carries with it a bit of sadness because you are now recognizing that your child may not grow up to be the vision of what you had in your mind when she was younger. An IQ of 60 is significantly below average.
Yeah.
So we would expect that there may be some adaptive deficits there in terms of functional life skills, like being able to manage grocery shopping and things like that, but maybe not. It's just a mild general learning disability. It probably isn't the most accurate measure anyway, because all children on the spectrum have verbal comprehension deficits, and most of the assessment tools we use require some form of verbal processing, either speaking aloud or thinking in your head. So we get an underestimate of the child's level of global intelligence. You need to begin to talk to school. An education plan that's appropriate must be put in place. She has a full entitlement and eligibility for an individual education plan, resource teaching hours, if necessary, a special needs assistant. That will be implemented in primary school. There needs also be a transition plan, which is written and carried out in sixth class, so that she transitions smoothly into secondary school. Children on the spectrum don't deal particularly well with change, so you prepare her for that transition. You begin simply by, once you've identified the school she's going to attend, take photographs of it, drive her around the school, let her see it, gain familiarity when it's time actually to approach transition, organize visits to the school, let her meet the year head, the school principal, etc. You just help her gain familiarity with what's upcoming, and the transition will probably be smooth. You need to find out if you're receiving secondary school has appropriate supports.
Yeah.
Resource teaching, maybe an SNA if needed, special needs assistant. And everything will go fairly well.
Yeah. Who writes the transition plan?
Well, transition plans usually aren't written, unfortunately, in this country, much like a lot of IEPs, because we have guidelines for the writing of IEPs. We have no legislative imperative that IEPs must be written. Mm. Most of our primary schools and a lot of secondary schools do write IEPs. The National Council for Special Education has a template that shows clearly what should be in this IEP. So that needs to be followed. In a good school, they will put everything in place that's necessary for the child on the spectrum.